Welcome to the Sports Illustrated Open Floor NBA podcast. My name's Ben Golliver. I'm here in a glamorous Oklahoma City conference room with Rob Mahoney. We are fresh off a remarkable Game 6 victory, 108-101 by the Warriors to even the series at three games apiece. It was one of those games that kind of made you think, is this the best game I've ever seen, or is this the best game since X other game? And it really, I mean, kind of left you with an adrenaline rush. I don't know about you, Rob. I had a hard time falling asleep last night. I think I was up, probably up till 4. So we figured we had to do a podcast to just kind of get this out. So this is the morning after podcast, and we're taping it on Sunday, getting ready for Game 7 on Monday in the Bay Area. Rob, did you have trouble sleeping last night?
I did. I think it's always a good sign when, you know, there are conversations in the media room. Oh, was this game better than that Spurs Heat Game 6 in the finals? You know, whenever you're talking about those kinds of measuring points, you know, you're in a good place. This was an all-time performance from a couple of individual players, an all-time performance in terms of the implications for both of these teams, and obviously a finals berth at stake, potentially going into this Game 7. It was a treat to be there.
So here's the counter argument to all of the hyperbole that we're throwing out there. I'm just going to get it out there so we can address. KD, rough from the field. Russell Westbrook, rough from the field. Can this be an all-time game if you've got two of the biggest names, two of the biggest stars in that game, not really having their signature performance? Did that take away from the magic to you? Because to me, it kind of added to it, right?
Yeah. No, I think it did. I kind of come from a similar perspective just in terms of, especially, I mean, watch like the way Andre Iguodala played defense down the stretch in the fourth quarter when the Thunder kind of really devolved into their ISO stuff, as we've seen them do before. But, you know, stripping Russell Westbrook on that one critical possession, you know, doing the same to Kevin Durant, diving out of bounds, trying to get the loose ball. This was some incredible defense from the Warriors pretty much throughout the game. And especially, I mean, they've really righted the ship in a big way in terms of just playing a little more honestly in terms of their coverage on guys like Andre Robertson and the way they're dealing with the team structure as a whole. And it's really paid off for them. And so when you're talking about not only that level of defense, but the Thunder, you know, they had their miscommunications and their miscues, but they were really guarding well. You know, a lot of the shots that Klay Thompson or Steph Curry hit were tough contested shots or long shots beyond what you would normally expect the defense to be able to cover. And so when you're talking about that level of coverage, that level of defense and effort on every possession, there are going to be guys who have lower field goal percentages than you would expect, especially when, you know, they have to deal with as much heavy lifting as guys like Russ and KD do.
For sure. I think part of it was, number one, the game was played at a really high intensity level the whole way, start to finish. And then also the Thunder stars have just been playing gigantic minutes throughout this series, but then also, you know, throughout the playoffs. So it did seem like a little bit, number one, they were pressing for sure, especially Kevin. I thought he came out in the first quarter and was really pressing, trying to kind of put his stamp on the game and knock the Warriors out early. And he just couldn't get the shots to fall. But I like that approach. I think that's what he should have done. And some people on Twitter I saw were kind of bagging on him, saying, move the ball, pass the ball. I mean, that was their game. That was their season, right? I mean, everything was lined up for them to win that Game 6. So I liked the mentality from Kevin Durant early. And I thought that both he and Russell played with excellent aggressiveness on defense. And just overall, throughout that game, it was just the meltdown late. And the thing that I wrote, I kind of compared it to a relapse, right? Like, this was all of their bad habits coming back at the worst possible time. And we had talked all season long, it's the decision-making. You know, Westbrook's just completely inane turnovers, right? It's the bogging down one-on-one, settling for tough contested shots instead of getting all these good shots that they've really been doing throughout the series. And we saw both of those things really come through late. I think it was a 19-5 run by the Warriors to close in the final 5 minutes, a 9-0 run in the final 2 minutes. Oklahoma City commits 4 turnovers in the final 2 minutes and can't score a point. Westbrook, it just seemed like he was topping himself with how dumb his turnovers could be, right, one after another. And so the scene in Chesapeake Energy Arena, I tried to kind of capture that in my game recap, but it was really remarkable, Rob. I was sitting right on like the corners basically of the media row, so I was almost surrounded by fans, 270 degrees. There was fans with like 2-3 minutes left who were covering their faces. They were turning away from the court. I didn't see any like open weeping, but I'm not joking. Like, it was that intense. Yeah. It was that emotional. And it was because of that relapse factor. It's like they're watching their loved ones fall into the same pattern of bad behavior. And it's like, why is this happening? Why me? Sure. Why now? And as it continued, the frustration levels were just unbelievable from the fans. And some people, frankly, just couldn't take it. I mean, they left the game early out of pure frustration and heartbreak, really.
Yeah.
And then after the game, and this is something I kind of put on Twitter and also, you know, I put it in my column, but a fan came straight up to the media row and says, this was Kevin's fault. Be sure to write that. And, I mean, Kevin Durant is the golden boy. You know, he's Oklahoma Hall of Fame already. He's got his own restaurant here. He's on the side of the billboards. And this was basically a fan base so frustrated by the return of these bad habits late that it kind of turned on its own favorite son. Now, are they going to wake up and forgive him and say, well, please come back in free agency? I would hope so.
Yeah.
But it was that kind of night.
No, it really was. And, I mean, to review the fourth quarter on the whole, the Thunder shot 5-19 from the field. 6 turnovers to the Warriors, 1. And I thought one thing, too, that really played into the Warriors' favor down the stretch, you know, they were running small for a good portion, if not that entire quarter. And Draymond Green, his defensive rebounding, I thought was really important. We saw earlier in this game, there were just some exhausting back-breaking possessions where Steven Adams, even if he wasn't able to get an actual rebound, was getting, you know, loose ball fouls and things like that, really extending OKC's possessions. And that's when we saw, you know, even if they were ISOing one of those shots, maybe on the second one, they're getting better ball movement. They're getting, you know, better collapsing the defense a little bit more effectively. And so just by limiting them a little bit better to one shot, or at least to help close out some of those possessions and trigger the break to create some of those turnovers, it was really big for the Warriors. And the Kevin Durant stuff is so strange just because, as you said, he is, you know, the golden boy of this franchise, of this city. We're not used to seeing him struggle necessarily in that way or struggle with his decision-making so much as, of course, the guy's going to miss shots. He's going to have nights where he's off. He's going to have nights where he takes, you know, 33 shots from the field, as we saw earlier in these playoffs, and miss a fair share of them. But it was just such costly late mistakes from him that are kind of uncharacteristic, even within the context of knowing that the Thunder have some of these bad habits and that they're longstanding. But so much of these playoffs have been about Oklahoma City really separating themselves from that record, from, you know, exercising really smart decision making, both in half court and transition situations. And it was a shame to see this great game kind of unravel a little bit down the stretch in accordance with that. That said, you know, the Warriors don't win this game. We don't get a game 7. If, you know, Durant and Westbrook aren't making some of those decisions.
Yeah, 2 quick things on that. I mean, number one, you're right. They've been much better in late game scenarios and really handled a lot of controversy in these playoffs, right? So that's the first part. But the second part is they've also done a great job of just blowing teams out, blowing the Warriors out, extending the leads. Like, they had the opportunity in the first half, and so many people tweeted at halftime, and I completely agreed. Man, the Thunder should be up by a lot more, right? Yep. Because Golden State hadn't yet really gotten the burst from Steph or Klay. And it was sort of like, how is Golden State even scoring at this point? And Oklahoma City had the energy advantage, was winning all the 50-50 balls. They were out quickly. So from that standpoint, it was one of those games I felt like they could have won that game by 20 if they had corralled everything. Everything had gone right early. They could have just ridden that out, and we never would have been talking about the collapse.
Instead, they had, I think, a 5-point lead at halftime.
Yep, and they pushed it to 8 for the fourth quarter, and then it just all went from there. And Billy Donovan, I mean, his post-game, he said, you know, that's not who we've been. That's not who we've been, which is just like the classic relapse talk, right? It's right. Like, oh, yeah, trying to cover up for the mistake here. And I felt bad for him because I think he's done a great job coaching the series. He got some great minutes from Enes Kanter. I mean, as one of the guys that we had kind of labeled as a pregame X factor, he kind of popped in there and gave them a little boost. He didn't get anything really from Dion Waiters and some of the other supporting cast guys. So he was kind of mixing and matching and trying to figure out like whatever he could possibly do to, you know, buy Kevin and Russell just a little bit of time so they'd be fresh down the stretch. But I do think the cumulative fatigue played a role here in terms of handling the pressure. Because yeah. I think, you know, both Kevin and Russell Westbrook, they've won their share of playoff series against really high-level opponents, right? Like, remember the Clippers a couple years ago had a really good team. They win that series. They beat the Spurs before. I don't think there's something inherent in their character, like they're chokers or they just can't handle it. Remember, Kevin Durant had this big reputation as a clutch player, you know, of all these game winners that he would hit and wanting the ball, wanting the moment. But boy, that was rough last night. And I wondered if they lose this series, does this one stick with these guys for a while? Does this particular loss, the way they lost it, stick with Durant and Westbrook's reputation? I have a feeling it will.
I mean, I would have to think it would stick with them personally for a while. This is the kind of loss that haunts you all summer, that haunts you for years to come if they ultimately do lose Game 7. If they win, not so much of an issue. You know, it's a lost opportunity at home, but ultimately you were able to rectify it. But this is one that's really hard to get back. And one thing to go back for a second when you're talking about Billy Donovan saying, this isn't who we've been. It's been really interesting to see throughout these playoffs the Thunder's kind of categorical denials that they are any different than they were in the regular season. It was, you know, throughout, you know, the round against the Spurs, it was, how are you guys playing such effective defense? And Kevin Durant or Russell Westbrook or Billy Donovan were saying, oh, no, we've always been this good. It's just they didn't really offer any explanation as to why that didn't show through in their game-to-game performance, in individual efforts, in, you know, their net ratings overall, lineup, you know, lineup data. You can look across the board. They were not this team in the regular season. And some, you know, that applies to late-game situations as well, where they really had trouble closing the stretch of a lot of games, just like we saw in this, you know, in this recent Game 6. But throughout these playoffs, hasn't been so much of a problem. And so, I mean, they've certainly evolved, but clearly they have some demons left to exercise. They have some bad habits. And, you know, as you said, they've been able to kind of sidestep those by not being in close games, by having these blowouts at home, by really running really good teams off the floor, which is an incredible credit to them. But at the same time, it wasn't necessarily testing them in the ways that a lot of their critics maybe would have liked.
And once they got to that test, boy, it didn't go so well.
Not so much.
Well, you know, we have been talking for like 10 minutes here. Do you think we maybe should mention Klay Thompson?
Maybe. I mean, we could get around to it.
Can you just read us off his like final stat line from the night? It was absolutely absurd. And my favorite Klay Thompson moment, maybe of this playoffs, maybe ever, was the post-game press conference where he's presented with the fact that he hit 11 threes, which is an NBA playoff record, and his immediate response was, well, you know, I should have 13. And it's not like he's bragging, because he's, I mean, I think he's got a pretty healthy ego, but he does not come across like a braggart at all in these press conferences. It's just this total matter of fact shooter's mentality that if he gets a clean look, he should hit it every single time. And he remembers the one that he misses, even on a night where he saves their season, hits 11 threes, and I think scored, what, 41?
Scored 41. 14 of 30 shooting overall, 11 of 18 from three, which is just nuts. And he's not wrong about the misses. I mean, there were a couple looks. There's one in the first quarter where, you know, it's like, I think it was a 1-2 off-ball screen. The Thunder completely miscommunicated. He's left wide open on the left wing. Just doesn't go down. I mean, some of the shots that he was taking and making were incredibly difficult. So maybe, in, you know, it all comes out in the wash in terms of, you know, some of the contested looks he was hitting. But one of the most incredible perimeter performances that I think the NBA has ever seen. And it all kind of came to a head with that, you know, his 10th three-pointer of the night, that ridiculous, I think it was 28-foot shot over Russell Westbrook, about 5 minutes remaining. I think the Thunder were leading by 7 at the time. At a time where the Warriors, you know, they were making a push, they were right there, but they were still a little bit vulnerable. The Thunder were still, you know, had the edge, had a little bit of the energy in the game, and shots like that, especially when you're on the road, I mean, it just sucks all the air out of the building.
One of the just most devastating aspects of this Warriors team is that Steph and Klay have both gotten hot so much over the course of these last couple of years. I mean, just count up the number of like 18-point quarters, 19-point quarters, 20-point quarters that it's just intuitive how they feed the guy who's got it rolling. I think Steph only had 6 points in the fourth quarter. He had had a pretty good third quarter. I want to say he went like 2 for 3 or 2 for 4. I mean, he didn't really take that many shots because it was all Klay, Klay, Klay. And I think you could find other teams where when you've got the season on the line, the best player, the MVP, is not necessarily going to be deferring, if you want to look at it as deferring. Basically, right, just ensuring that Klay is getting enough shots where he can score 19 points in a fourth quarter. But the Warriors just go into that mode, and you can just see them hunting for Klay open threes, and you can see Klay just hunting around the perimeter. Anytime there was a turnover, he's running to his spots. It's beautiful to watch, and it's so, I mean, I don't know how you really game plan for these guys when they've got it rolling like that. What can you possibly do? And so I think that's one thing maybe in Durant Westbrook's defense. It's like, yes, they made more than their fair share of mistakes, but it's not like they went down to some 45-win team that just happened to get lucky and, you know, someone like Reggie Jackson, you know, kind of right, went off. I mean, this is Klay Thompson, one of the best shooters of all time, putting on one of the best shooting performances in the postseason of all time. And it just so happened to coincide with Oklahoma City's mistakes.
No, it did. And something that I think, you know, you make a great point about the shot hunting that the guys like Curry and Thompson are able to undergo. And with Klay, especially watching him work, and everyone on the Thunder knows where they want to go, especially, you know, they open the fourth quarter with Steph on the bench, just trying to get a couple minutes out of that. They're obviously looking for Klay. They're obviously running him around screens. But, you know, the economy of movement, the way he's able to shake and fake defenders, it's really remarkable. And, you know, I think with Klay, you hear a lot about, oh, his shooting form is so great. You hear a lot about his off-ball movement as being kind of Reggie Miller-like. I don't think we put enough stock into the spatial intelligence of knowing the angles, of knowing just how to shed his guy, how to use screens, sometimes using the same screen in multiple directions, just kind of getting a guy going under one way, cutting back the other way, and really pinning him twice. it's so hard to do, especially that late in the game when, you know, as we mentioned earlier, everyone is exhausted. Everyone's been worn ragged by this game. Maybe the Warriors a little less so because they're playing, you know, some fewer minutes than guys like Durant and Westbrook are.
They were going hard, though.
They were certainly going hard. To have that kind of presence of mind to not only seek out the ball, which, you know, any good scorer can do, but to seek it out in a way that really puts the defense at a consistent disadvantage, it's a tremendous effort to the player that Klay is.
Yeah, and on top of that spatial intelligence that you're talking about, the mental fortitude to always believe the shot's going to go in no matter what. I mean, you can talk about that, guys say it, but to really feel that and to really exude that in that type of game where you want every single shot and they're going in and you want it again and want it again, there's just not that many guys who could be on that level. I mean, it's a handful of guys, and it's almost not even comparable to the big-time clutch guys that we think of from postseasons past 20 years ago, 30 years ago, because this guy's hitting three-pointers that they would never even consider attempting. So to have the mentality plus the intelligence plus the execution from his teammates to kind of get the shots, it's just all credit to Steve Kerr's offense. This is the Warriors team that we wanted to see. And, right. And let's go back to that because, you know, I've been kind of hard on them in this postseason. They've been really frustrating. If I was Steve Kerr, a lot of times during the series, I would have been exasperated. It's very possible that the Warriors could have lost game six and they'd look back and say, well, we blew game one. We weren't ready to start this series. And that's almost unconscionable. And instead, they were able to kind of eke it out late in both games five and six. They give themselves a chance to win in game seven. Talent eventually rises, so give them credit. But boy, the Warriors team that we saw here in game six is the team that's been not on the – we haven't seen that team playing at that championship level for long stretches throughout this postseason. And it was nice to have them back.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, they're kind of peaking, at least in this series, at the right time in terms of, you know, what we saw in Game 6 almost makes what we saw in Games 3 and 4 that much more ridiculous in terms of, you know, giving up 72-point first halves, even against a team that's as explosive as the Thunder. The Warriors' defense just wasn't there, and some of it was just on an individual kind of stop-your-man basis, to say nothing of kind of what they were doing, you know, structurally and schematically and some of the things they were playing with there. It just wasn't, you know, whether it was a focus issue, it's not really an effort issue. I mean, these guys were going hard. They just weren't plugged in into the way, you know, in the way that they were at their best moments in the regular season. And I mean, this is game six was the best we've seen the Warriors play in the playoffs, even if, you know, some of the stat lines might not represent it. Guys like Draymond Green and Steph have certainly had better individual games at times, but this as a collective was a really nice effort for the Warriors and exactly the kind of thing you want to see, not only to extend the series, but if they are going to the NBA Finals, we want the Warriors to be at this level to play the best basketball they can.
This might have been the most iconic Warriors performance too of the Steve Kerr era. I mean, the one that I really got excited about was Curry's overtime against the Blazers from this season. You know, you go back to last year, they won the West Finals basically so easily. They did have that one late stop on Harden that was pretty memorable. You know, their finals wins, once they figured it out, they kind of figured it out and they rolled. But this, I mean, season on the line, down eight entering the fourth quarter, being the number one clutch team in the league and having that play out according to the numbers, having the centerless lineup with Draymond at center finally, you know, rediscover its magic. I mean, there was, you know, this is one of those performances where if they go on to win the finals, you kind of circle game six of the West Finals and be like, that was the night where they proved that they were going to be the champions. So speaking of that, do we write the Thunder off? I mean, game seven's Monday. You got to imagine they're spending their Sunday just still, the Warriors in the afterglow of that victory, and the Thunder probably having a real tough time getting out of bed this morning.
Yeah.
Billy Donovan's approach was classic coach, coming out and saying how excited he was for game seven, which you got to flip the negatives to a positive if you're a coach. I think it's a great lesson for high school coaches out there, college coaches. Just watch how Billy Donovan conducted himself in that press conference, because he was doing everything he possibly could to kind of keep their resolve together. And we've praised Oklahoma City's mental toughness and ability to fight through difficult situations throughout this postseason. But this is a different kind of test. I mean, you're going to Oracle, game seven, crowd's going to be fired up. Golden State finally has the momentum like you're talking about. Klay and Steph both are starting to get off a little bit from outside. Do they have a shot?
I think they have a shot. I mean, they're the best road team in these playoffs. They've beaten the Warriors and the Spurs both at home at this point, which you really can't oversell how important and how impressive that is. Plus, I mean, I would say kind of working in the opposite direction and against them is, as we mentioned earlier, just the minutes that these guys are putting on, especially kind of the core Thunder players. And it's not just shots coming up short. It's a lot of that, you know, the late game spaciness is just going to be a function of if these guys do get worn down, they're not seeing the court with clear eyes at that point. And it really is just, it goes way beyond the physical in terms of the exhaustion in this series. But with as well as they played on the road, with as well as we've seen them execute defensively, and frankly, it's been one of those things where you're almost waiting for them to fall off a little bit. You're waiting for them to say, look, we watched this team for 82 games and they were not this. And they've really sustained on that side of the floor in a way that I think gives them a shot. But they do need to be better offensively. They do need to get back to moving the ball more effectively and to spacing things a little bit better and get out of kind of where they were forcing the issue in game six. You're going to see some of that just because the tensions are going to be even higher because guys like Durant, as we said, are going to want to put their stamp on that game as much as they did in game one and two in game six. So it's going to be hard for Durant and Westbrook both to kind of walk that fine line of executing and imposing as much as you possibly can to have the best individual performance that your team needs, but also kind of dialing things back in a way that is maybe a little bit more responsible. I think they can walk that line. I mean, these are two of the best players in the NBA, but it's certainly not likely.
But that's really what they struggle with in game six, right? And so now, are they thinking about that? I think that's kind of the repercussion. It's like, we know you have to be very aggressive, but not insanely aggressive. And they didn't quite work in game six. They didn't find it. It falls apart. And now they have to kind of try to do it on the road when Klay's going to be out of his mind confidence-wise. Steph, I think, is starting to build some confidence too. And you could tell that they were very excited by that victory after game six. I mean, I think that they really had the brush with death, right? Like down 3-1, you know, they had this scary moment of like, wow, we're really going to blow the 73-win season. We're just going to let it go in the West Finals. And that gives you a certain type of confidence and fearlessness. And that's sort of what we associate with the Warriors. Okay, so let's talk about the implications a little bit if the Thunder do go down. Well, first of all, let me just quickly say, I think the Warriors are going to win game seven. I give the Thunder a chance, not a huge chance. My original series pick was Warriors in seven. Needless to say, I didn't quite predict everything that's happened along the way. But these are two really, really, really good teams. The Warriors are really tough to beat at home. And I think they kind of learned their lesson in game one. They've pretty much controlled play in both games two and game five when they were at home. And so, you know, Oklahoma City is going to have to kind of unlock that somehow. And I just don't know really how they do it. Not only is it on Durant and Westbrook to kind of find the feel that you're talking about, but also some of these supporting cast members are starting to fade a little bit. Like they got the Robertson game, right? That was a game four. Is he going to give them a second game? You know, where's Deion Waiters? Like he's been MIA for the last couple nights.
Yeah.
Donovan's really shrunk his rotation. Any sort of foul trouble for Adams or Ibaka.
Or even Robertson, like we saw last night.
Or even Robertson, yeah, great point. I mean, that really cripples them and puts them in a different spot. So I think that we're just back to their margin of error being smaller, and that's a rough spot to be in. But this series has consistently surprised. Anytime you think you want to crown somebody, the other team comes back, which is exactly how good basketball should be. So Game 7 is going to be must-see TV. I'm picking the Warriors, which means Thunder fans should probably be pretty happy about that. Okay, so let's talk about implications. If the Thunder do lose, I mean, clearly this is the most devastating loss of their kind of time in Oklahoma City. I mean, outside of the injuries, which are kind of different. But they're on the brink, you know, 5 minutes away from facing LeBron, getting the rematch, 5 minutes away from having their best shot at a title, no question about it, 5 minutes away from capping off these amazing returns from injuries, both Westbrook and Durant in recent years, all the way back up to the summit, and instead they fall short in this familiar way. What's the fallout like? I mean, I don't think what happened basically is going to force Durant away. I think he's going to stay there basically no matter what. It's almost like he has to atone for this series in a weird way, kind of make it right. I don't think it really changes their core so much. I mean, everybody who they wanted to bring back, I think they're going to want to keep, you know, bringing back.
Yeah.
But do you see any long-term implications from this kind of loss? And the reason why I ask is because remember the Clippers, you know, they blow this 3-1 lead last year. And like that loomed over them this entire season. It loomed over the free agency with DeAndre Jordan. It got brought back up once Blake has his off-court incident. It kind of becomes this defining situation. Does the same thing happen for the Thunder if they blow a 3-1 lead?
I see it more as being kind of the classic like team that loses in the finals goes on a rampage the next season kind of scenario where if Durant does come back, and I would expect him to for all the reasons you mentioned, I mean, it would seem so strange to get this close and for him to leave, especially when so many of the other kind of prime suitors are these other Western Conference teams or some East teams that maybe aren't quite as good. You know, this really seems like such a great spot for him in so many ways, whether you're talking about culturally within the city, within the organization, within this particular roster, it's a fit. And so to see him leave would be pretty unexpected at this point. That said, I mean, I do think that if they lose this series, I mean, if Russell Westbrook is pissed off now, just on a daily basis playing basketball, I can't imagine how he would approach next season knowing that they could have had this and they could have had another trip to the finals. Durant himself has been a little feistier than usual this year and last year in terms of, you know, just reacting to things on the court, in terms of where, you know, he perceives his place in the league and the respect that he gets from fans and media and whatnot. I mean, I think these guys would be completely locked in from the start of next season. And especially, I think there's a lot of reason for confidence in Billy Donovan in terms of this team's long-term process, Sam Presti in terms of some of the pieces that he's been able to put on this roster, and how they fit reasonably and effectively alongside Durant and Westbrook, where you're not taking away from what your stars do well. You're attacking teams like the Warriors in unconventional ways at times by going big, by going small. You have a lot of flexibility within your roster, I think more so than they were given credit for. There's room to make a couple subtle improvements and still be a really good team. I think where you have to maybe have some worry would be just in what you mentioned with the Clippers. Just does this hang over them from a mental standpoint? And it's kind of an extension of what we were talking about in terms of going into Game 7. If they're really in their heads about this balance of how much do I need to do, that's where you start to get a little awkward in your execution and things can really start slipping. But if they're able to kind of dial up this defense on command, like we've seen them do in the playoffs, and if Durant and Westbrook remain, you know, some of the best scorers on the planet, which I would expect that they would, I think that the long-term implications are ultimately pretty slim, win or lose. Obviously, they'd like to win, but this team isn't going to be a bad place even if they fall out of this series.
So I do wonder, though, if Westbrook's going to take a particular type of knock, especially in the short term. Just because of the laughing at Curry, the timing of that for him could not have been worse. So he does it after a Game 5 loss, which, why are you laughing off an opponent's abilities when he just beat you? I think that's the number one question. That rubs some people the wrong way. And let's be honest, Westbrook's polarizing, just like kind of like Draymond Green. Sure. He's always going to rub people the wrong way. But when you come out and don't back it up at home, and not only do you not back it up at home, but you kind of fall apart in the key moments in such an obvious way, and in such a way where you're almost fulfilling all the negative stereotypes people have about your game, right? Too wild, not thinking things through. And he had mastered so many of those questions, right? Yeah. I mean, this year his decision-making has been unbelievable. His passing is phenomenal. He's never been more in control of an offense, of himself, you know, even of his emotions, you know, not as many technical fouls. And yet now you're going right back to all those stereotypes. And then if you lose in Game 7, so you're out, and you're just kind of robbed of what you thought was going to be a finals trip, you know, does that kind of linger with, you know, Russell Westbrook's, you know, reputation or his persona? I mean, does he kind of – I mean, he almost goes to a higher level of, you know, villain in the NBA in a way. And it's kind of weird to say that, but I just think that the image of him chuckling and laughing, it's going to kind of linger, sort of like Dwayne Wade, LeBron James, when they're, you know, fake coughing at Dirk Nowitzki in the 2011 finals. If you do those kinds of subtle digs and you wind up losing, people hold that against you because they think you're overconfident, you're cocky, you're not focused on the right things, and you're not respectful to your opponents. And it's just such an easy and lazy contrast with guys like Clay and Steph, who are never going to give any sort of bulletin board material. They basically run away from the options of ever doing that.
Yeah,
I kind of worry for Westbrook's sake because he's going to have a lot of really good work get squandered because of that stupid laughing incident.
I think that's one of the areas in which we as kind of a sports consuming collective can kind of try to sidestep some of those things. And with Durant too, in terms of if the Thunder do lose the series, I mean, barring just a complete no-show in Game 7, which I wouldn't expect, both of those guys have been tremendous throughout these playoffs. And we can look at those little kind of narrative moments and use them to kind of define what we take out of these playoffs. I'm sure a lot of people will, and I can understand why. But ultimately, what they've proven on the court and the way that Westbrook has been able to read and, you know, really manipulate opposing defenses, the onslaught that he has, you know, physically, just in terms of what he demands of opposing teams on a game-by-game basis, what we've seen from Durant, both in terms of his shot-making, but also, you know, as a rebounder, as a defender, you know, really keying these small-ball lineups. Both those guys have taken steps, you know, really positive steps in terms of their overall careers and what we would have reasonably expected from them at this point, even coming from a superstar standard to begin with. It would be a shame if it came to that. I think, you know, it ultimately may be kind of a defining moment in this series, and, you know, we'll have to wait probably years to find out just how much that might have pissed off Steph Curry or anyone with the Warriors, because they, you know, as you mentioned, they're going to keep that a little close to the vest. But
they should be pissed off.
I mean, I think it's understandable, but I would say no more pissed off than any of the other little digs that Russell Westbrook, you know, kind of throws at them on a game-by-game or day-by-day or series-by-series basis. You know, he said the tone from, you know, right off the bat in terms of saying that Steph Curry wasn't anything special, basically. Wasn't anything that they hadn't seen before. You watch him over the course of the game, I think it's pretty clear, if not the contempt he has for teams like the Warriors, certainly his belief in his own supremacy over what they have to offer. And I think he's right to think that, just given what he can bring to the table and bring to a specific matchup if guys like Curry are guarding him. I don't blame the confidence. I don't blame the brashness. It may just turn out to be one of those unfortunate moments that gets kind of put in a capsule and put up on the shelf for everybody to see. I hope for Russ's sake that it doesn't end up kind of on the wall of the Warriors Museum.
Yeah, a couple thoughts, sort of bigger picture. Number one, how much would you love to be able to watch USA basketball practices come, August?
Yeah.
When you could potentially have Westbrook, Durant, LeBron, Steph, Clay, and Draymond all in the same five-on-five scrimmage at the same time. I mean, holy cow, a level of intensity and contempt that you're talking about is just going to be off the charts. And actually, we could throw Kawhi Leonard in there. He's probably got some silent contempt ready to kind of work out.
Or how those guys could be in the same lineup. They could be they could be teammates, which is in a way even better.
Well, you're getting to my next point, which is imagine, number one, watching the practices would be amazing. But number two, imagine being Venezuela's coach. You've got the first-round draw against the against the USA, and you just watch Klay Thompson hit 11 three-pointers, and you're like thinking, oh, wait, they get to shoot from a shorter line? Oh, God, like how are we going to stop these guys? And Klay Thompson's going to be like the fourth or fifth option on the USA Olympic team. He may or may not even start. It's like, what an embarrassment of riches, and Rio's going to be just a complete cakewalk. But
To be fair, I mean, if you are Venezuela's coach, how much are you really concerned with how scorched is my scorched earth after playing Team USA,
Well, I think you try to talk yourself into it, right? Like, oh, yeah, we could pull the upset. Teams have beaten the USA before, but there's not really any talking yourself around 11 three-pointers by one guy.
No.
Okay. Let's really quickly just, 30 seconds on Unsung Heroes from Game 6. You mentioned Andre Iguodala. I think he starts, right? I mean, he's the number one guy.
Absolutely. His defensive effort, and sometimes it really hasn't borne out in terms of the plus minus or the net ratings in the series, where he's on the floor for some pretty brutal stretches. But he's also playing some of those minutes without Curry, where they're really leaning on him, especially as the rotation is tightened up. And just the way that he forces a guy like Durant, who Durant is such an effective ball handler at this point. He's so long. His stride can really get by you even if you're in a good defensive stance and good defensive position. I thought Iguodala did a great job of forcing him to go left and shoot right in a lot of different situations where Durant's just leaning and super uncomfortable. And not only that, I mean, Iguodala had one of the most impressive baskets of the game in terms of that transition finger roll that, especially in retrospect, when you're looking at a game that was separated by 2 or 3 points at a couple of different stages, it really turned out to be a big bucket.
Okay, yeah, and definitely great X-Factor performance, unsung hero performance from Harrison Barnes. No, just kidding. Harrison Barnes was just Harrison Barnes. I think another unsung hero actually was Draymond Green.
Yeah.
He had the poke away steal and the Durant trying to pass to Westbrook late that set up, I think they set up a Klay three that was indicative of him being much more locked in and in tune. And we saw him go coast to coast a couple times, setting things up. Now, he did miss a few opportunities there running transition, but it was Draymond being Draymond finally. I mean, we haven't seen a ton of playmaking Draymond in this series, which has been kind of disappointing, especially in the half court. I mean, the 4-on-3 stuff that they kind of butter their bread with hasn't really been a thing. But for him to be able to hold down the late game lineup, to be the center, to finally kind of get that group going, to me, the success of that 5-man lineup always starts with him because he's got such an immense responsibilities when you're undersized, trying to play center, keeping guys off the glass, protecting the rim, all of those things. And so kudos to him. I think those are my unsung heroes. Did we miss anybody?
I think on the losing side, one guy we mentioned earlier who I think we could bring up again is Enes Kanter, just because when you're really not expecting him to be able to log many minutes. He gave the Thunder 11 last night, 8 points, and some of those were against smaller lineups. It was in tough spots.
He hit a Dirk fadeaway.
He did hit a Dirk fadeaway. I hope he's paying royalties on that along with every other player in the NBA. But, I mean, Kanter, he's a guy who's always going to get – he's going to get killed on some possessions defensively. It's just a fact of life with his career, especially against this team. But when you're able to just chip in a couple points here and there, really take advantage of some of their smaller defenders, get a couple offensive rebounds, especially in a game where, as we mentioned, Steven Adams and Serge Ibaka and Andre Robertson were all battling foul trouble, they needed a body, and he was able to give them that for a solid stretch.
So I'm not a Kanter guy at all. I think a lot of people know that just because the plus minuses are so bad and overall. He's definitely taken steps forward, so give him credit. I thought one of the funniest possessions last night was he was coming up to set a screen for Westbrook high pick and roll, and Durant was screaming at him to do it, just like pointing and yelling at him to do it. And he's like circling around confused, like he doesn't know where to go. He doesn't think he's supposed to be the screener he's trying to get. I think it was Ibaka to go set the screen. He just looks totally clueless and lost, like a tourist without a map in a new big city, right? He finally goes up and sets the screen. And then like the shot clock's winding down. Durant is like off the ball, screaming, stomping his foot, pointing. Like, oh, here goes this possession completely to hell again, right? But, you know, Westbrook finds Kanter on the pop. And he just calmly, smoothly hits the 18-foot jumper with a beautiful shooter's touch, and it swishes through. And it's like, holy cow. Like, even this guy, when he's at his worst moments, when his teammates are frustrated with him, when he's lost in a, on a play, he does have that talent where he can occasionally just pull himself out of it. So kudos to Kanter for showing up a little bit. He hasn't been a major part of the series. We talked about that with Andrew Sharp on the last podcast in terms of the kind of juice it takes for Billy Donovan to just dump a guy who's a max contract player out of a series.
Right.
But again, big time kudos to Kanter for popping right back in when they call on him and giving some quality minutes. Okay, so let's finish here on predictions for Game 7. Like I said, I really see the Warriors riding this and taking it home. I think Oklahoma City is going to be competitive, but I think it's going to be one of those games where they just kind of get outlasted. Kerr's strategy of using the bench has been frustrating at times. You know, some of these lineups he puts in just really make you hold your breath the entire time they're in there.
Yeah.
But it has led to fresher Steph, fresher Clay, and fresher Draymond. And I think ultimately they're just going to kind of outlast them in Game 7, setting up the rematch from last year's finals.
Yeah. No, I mean, I agree. And we were kind of handicapping this last night in terms of what percentage chance do you give the Thunder in a Game 7. I mean, ultimately, I'm maybe somewhere in like the mid-30s, which may be more optimistic than some, just because I do trust so much of what they've done in this series. And the Warriors, they've looked great and certainly more Warriors-like over these last two games. But with some of their tendencies, and you know, they always kind of ride a fine line in terms of, you know, their passes on back doors, really trying to fit in a tight window, and how those turnovers can play into Oklahoma City's offense. And there's so many little things that, could, if they go wrong for the Warriors, just feed into exactly what the Thunder want. And if you get enough of those things, I think, you know, Oklahoma City can get the breaks it needs. Ultimately, you know, winning on the road, Game 7, the historical precedent kind of speaks for itself in terms of how difficult that is, not to mention doing it against a 73-win team and a defending champion. So, you know, the Warriors are the favorites, maybe considerably so, but I'm not ready to you know, write off the Thunder completely just yet. I'm certainly eager to see what they do, and I'm eager to see, you know, how Steve Kerr manages some of these minutes in terms of, you know, we saw Festus Ezeli really give the Warriors nothing for, you know, a minute stretch, you know, in Game 6. And it really kind of hurt them in terms of, you know, if Andrew Bogut's playing great, that's fine. If the small ball's working, as we've seen over the last couple of games, then that helps you. But there's still some spots in the rotation where you could see the Warriors maybe giving up a little bit too much in a critical game.
I think we're going to know within the first 6 minutes if it's going to be a game. You know, I think there's laying egg potential just because of the haymakers that the Warriors delivered. If they come out with a super hot start, and Curry mentioned how important the start's going to be. I mean, if they come out and really put their stamp on it, I could see it going south quick for Oklahoma City. But I also think that they're better than that. And I certainly hope they're better than that because Game 6 was unbelievable. Game 7, you know, has unbelievable potential too. It'll just be, you know, sort of if they can get there. It starts with KD and Russ, though. I mean, this is a big-time atonement moment for them. They're both going to need, I think, really strong performances. It's tough to count on role guys to save you in Game 7 on the road. I mean, it's going to start with the stars. All right, Rob, I think we broke down a fantastic Game 6. That was the best game you've seen since one.
Oh, that's a tough one. I mean, certainly that Finals Game 6, you know, comes back. I think, I mean, especially in person, in terms of being in the arena, this has to be up there, just in terms of not enough can be said about kind of the rising tension and the energy in that building. And, you know, that's true of a lot of OKC games in general. But this one in particular, the fans knew what was at stake. And they knew that this was, you know, in a lot of ways, effectively a Game 7 for their team, which I think fuels some of that disappointment that you experienced after the game in terms of the backlash with Durant and things like that. But this was, it was an incredible atmosphere, you know, and as we said before, an all-time effort. And to see Clay, you know, just really ignite the way that he did, it's hard to beat that.
Yeah. I wonder if LeBron's nervous right now. I think he probably went from like, oh yeah, I'm going to get Durant, who I kind of own, to, oh no, the Warriors finally decided that they're going to lock in and play defense, and oh God, it's the same guys who were unreal last year.
I haven't checked his, actually he's probably on his social media freeze or whatnot, but you know, if this were the regular season and that game happened, I'm sure it would be the tweet for LeBron. Oh, I was out of the theater last night, you know, watching a movie with my kids, totally didn't watch that game in the Western Conference.
Yeah. Well, that's all for us. This is the Sports Illustrated Open Floor NBA Podcast. I'm Ben Golver with Rob Mahoney here in Oklahoma City. I believe I will reconvene with Andrew Sharp for the Finals Preview Podcast on Tuesday. We'll see who it's going to be. You know, Warriors, Cavs, Thunder, Cavs. You can't go wrong either way. You know, it's rematches kind of Curry LeBron or Durant LeBron. I mean, those are big time headlines. So can't wait for that. We will catch you guys from the Bay Area in a couple days. Thanks so much for listening. You can subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, probably some other places. I still don't really know the details on that, but just try us on iTunes. That seems like it's pretty easy to do. All right. Thanks a lot.
Another great edition of Open Floor is in the books. Did you know Locked On has a daily podcast for all 30 NBA teams? If you're a Lakers fan, search Locked On Lakers. A Celtics fan, search Locked On Celtics. Warriors fans, search Locked On Warriors. Yes, all 30 NBA teams have a daily bite-sized podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.